B-Pod Studios.
97.5, The Fanatic.
Tom Ginn is joining us right now on the Comcast Business Hotline, Beyond Fast. What have you been up to? I see you doing stuff for Sixers.com here and there. What are you doing during quarantine time, Tom?
Well, probably a lot like the rest of us, you know what I mean? Just everything a little bit longer, and I've always been like a voracious reader, so I'm certainly tearing into that a little bit. Turns out I'm a valet. I really didn't know what that is, but regarding my 14-year-old son, I'm like, may I enter? Son, I thought, wait on him hand and foot. We're together all the time, and we just celebrated my daughter's birthday yesterday, and obviously Mother's Day with my wife, Robin. So that was a nice day. But, with my son, we're out in the backyard shooting hoops a lot. And we've converted our dining room table to a ping pong table, so we're on, like, our 100th game there, and that's a load of fun. But, just cooking meals for everybody and just doing a lot of the things that we're all doing to try to get through this. And, you know, your heart goes out to the families that are struggling with worry and illness and our first responders and nurses and doctors, and that everybody that's struggling during this time as our world has been turned upside down.
Absolutely. What was the conversation like before you turned the table into a ping pong table?
Well, Robin's right in there, so that wasn't even I'm hoping the outdoor season will be a little better for me because the table will be a regulation table, and I'm kind of a, which is, this equals bad, but flat. I go for the corners, change of pace, da-da-da-da-da. And the tide has turned. My son's a pretty good athlete. I think Bob and I have talked about it over the years about our sons. And, he's got the confidence, and the momentum has shifted. It is so, it's so funny to be on the other side. And, oh, my God, it's a riot. We've had a lot of fun.
Just to backtrack and go back to, what was it, March 12th, that everything shut down? We're watching that final game with the Sixers. Final game, the most recent game, I should call it, just to leave some optimism out there. We're watching that game, and we're following everything around the league, and we're trying to understand what's going on with the Jazz, for instance, and we're relating it back to Philadelphia, and we're just kind of questioning what's going to happen. How were you following everything during that game? Were you following everything, or were you just trying to stay focused on the game itself?
Well, as you know, Brian Seltzer does such a great job with our pre- and our post-game radio coverage, and he sits up with us. Our engineer has been great throughout the years, Marty Dickerson. He sits to my left, and Brian is to his left. And Brian's working. He's literally, and Bob knows, he's like a reporter. He's just working it. And so he had passed that along, and I think all I said at the time was that game had been postponed indefinitely. I didn't say anything regarding why that ball hadn't tipped in Oklahoma with that game with the Thunder and the Jazz. And I think we said the game was postponed. Maybe we did, but I just remember the game had ended. The Sixers game with Detroit had gone to completion. And I do a couple quick segments in terms of the post game, and then Brian takes over. And I think it was just about when Brian started his segment of what we'll call the post-game show, looking for sponsorship opportunities. No, but so Brian reported it, you know what I mean? He's so thorough. And normally, again, reporting has been Bob's background for years. You go with a second source. But this was a press release from the National Basketball Association, and Brian just, you know, reported out, the season has been canceled. I'm like, what? And Mark Zumoff was right in front of us, and he kind of looked, turned around, and by this time, we're kind of the only guys up there, turned around with a look of, like, wonderment, like, whoa, you know, and who would have thought, you know, with that being what we're talking about at that time, and whatever, the 1st of March, the first few days of March, that here we are, right? I mean, I don't know that anybody anticipated this, but it's certainly been a huge change for everybody involved in our country and around the world with this COVID-19 coronavirus.
I was actually listening to you guys, Tom. I had just seen a high school basketball game up in North Jersey, and I was driving back down listening to you do the end of the game and was in the car long enough to hear Brian announce it. And I swear to you, I came inside and I said, I'll never forget that. That's one of those I'll never forget moments for me in sports. But my question I wanted to ask you, Tom, is when you're doing games, and I know when I was covering games, you kind of look at them differently, I think. You know, I do it as covering them. You're doing it to give the information to those that can't see the games. Do you go back and watch the games now that you have time to, Tom, and look at them maybe differently if you do rewatch them, not having to be the work guy, but just being the observer that you can be?
Well, I love doing that. You know, just in watching games, just as a fan, not necessarily just the Sixers games, but I watch off the ball a lot because I don't really get to do that as much as a play-by-play announcer because, as you say, I'm trying to describe what's going on, and the ball is the biggest thing in terms of where the action is currently and where it's going and whatnot. And, you know, that's a great thing to watch in terms of, especially having played a little bit, you know, off the ball, if someone's trying to break free to get open, who's setting screens away from the ball, who's helping off the ball defensively. So as a viewer, sometimes I'll watch and watch away from the play. Like in football, I watch the line play. Sometimes I watch the linebacker. And sometimes, you know, you miss Russell Wilson getting rid of the ball because you've watched, you know, where the safety was going or like that. But, no, there's no doubt about it. And then I haven't watched as many Sixers games during this stretch, but obviously with so many games from years past being replayed, and then reliving this with my son, like The Last Dance, and being hooked on those things every single Sunday night, and being glued to the TV for that, you're watching those things. That's not necessarily watching a game, but I would say for sure you watch the game a little bit differently. And then, having been a sportscaster and have been an athlete for 30, 40, you know, a long time, you would like to think you have a different layer or two to be able to lay over it because of the experience. Certainly as an announcer, I can say what they're going to say before they even say it. And that's been true. And that's not a boast. That's just like part of what I've been doing. And you have the same mindset. But I've been able to do that for years.
Speaking with Tom McGinnis, Sixers radio play-by-play man right here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Speaking of The Last Dance, is there a guy that, and you called games Jordan was playing, but is there a guy that you wish you could have called? Like, if you go through all-time history, is there one player that you wish you could have done play-by-play for?
Well, certainly, you know, you think back to those great Celtics teams with Russell. The one player I really, and I'll tie this back to the Sixers, I mean, to be able to, a couple things. To be able to call games with a superstar athlete like Allen Iverson, like, we hope to get Allen on our, what's called Tom's Talks. Mark mentioned I've started to do this new podcast, and that's hopefully in the pipeline. And one of the things I would say to Allen Iverson, and again, I've talked to him many years since he's retired, since he's come back to the center, but it's thank you. Because of the things that I've been able to experience because of his greatness, he and his teammates and the coaches and the teams that he played on, but like going to the NBA Finals, like watching a guy score 50 points, like getting to go to Springfield and the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame when he was inducted, and in 2002 when Larry Brown went, I went up there. And as a basketball fan, that was like a kid in a candy store. I love that. And what I was going to say about whether it was calling a guy's games, and I, we all with the Sixers have so much appreciation for Billy Cunningham, but I would love to get NBA Entertainment to send me 30 games of Billy Cunningham, of the Sixers, with Billy C. Because that's a guy, like, I watched the NBA as a youngster growing up, and as we know, there wasn't as many games out at that time. They were on the weekend, Sixers Celtics, with the Lakers and the Boston Celtics or Sixers. But I didn't really get into the heart of Billy C.'s career. And I would love to be able to watch him play because I know he was an extraordinary player, you know, swooping down there with the left hand and whatnot. But there's any number of players. I'm obviously, being of a certain age, you have nostalgia for the past. But no, there's no doubt that the superstar players make life easier. Hey, anybody, you know, can be a good announcer when your team's rocking and rolling and so-and-so is doing whatever they do to the highest level of competition.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. text Jason to 45911, and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5, The Fanatic.
Tom, we see that some players are trying to maybe get workouts in and get back into the gym a little bit. What does Tom McGinnis do? Do you have to keep the voice, you know, you have to keep going? Do you look at games, or do you announce your son outside, to, you know, shooting baskets? What do you do, or is that just something that it'll come back naturally?
Yeah, no, that does it. There's no practice regarding that. But I would say this, like, as an announcer, you know, to me, and I've always been a news guy, I grew up in a newsroom in terms of my early career in television. I was a sportscaster, but you're in a newsroom. And I think it makes you, and the reading, you know, just across the board in different genres, whether it's literature or nonfiction, just being well-informed and having an idea, I think, informs you as a broadcaster, whether it's through vocabulary. Again, that's like studying for Jeopardy. That's, you're not going to handle that overnight. I just think as a way of life, to have that, but it's not like I think about, oh, how am I going to call the game or whatever. I do, one of the things we do at night is I sit there and I read to my son all the time. My wife thinks I have a second career as a narrator and an audible book guy. Maybe that's in the future. But there's no, you know, certainly there's a lot of smack talk in those backyard basketball shooting games and whatnot, but there's no preparation regarding practicing, getting ready to go back and call games or whatever.
You know what, Tom? I think I just smell a bit right there. I think I smell a radio bit. Maybe we have you do some, maybe some children's books. Would you read some stuff for us?
Oh, I would love to do that. I remember one years ago at Bryn Mawr, it was, you know, a so-called celebrity thing. I know Jim Gardner was there. There was a real celebrity there. But we read For the Blind and Dyslexic at a lab there. I don't know if it still exists. And I tore into that, and it was, you know, they do it all the time. I was like, you know, I am ready for the silver medal, make it a gold. And I went in there, and he was a very, like, a librarian type of person that was on the other side of the glass, if you will. And, you know, and I thought I killed it. You know, it was some, I don't even know what the book was. And she kind of framed it properly. She said, oh, you mispronounced the back on page 67. I'm like, come on, back up. Where's page 67?
I would pay to be in attendance. Tom, what if you weren't doing, and you referenced the thing about your wife saying that you'd be, you know, maybe a narrator or something, but if you weren't calling basketball games, what would you be doing?
Like, as far as a career, like what?
As far as a career, what was the next option, yeah, or the next thing you wanted to go to?
Yeah, so the next thing was, you know, when I was young, and again, I started in television. I mean, I was really lucky. I started in Charleston, South Carolina. I was a broadcast journalism major at Northern Illinois, which is another dig. My son goes, you couldn't go to the University of Illinois. You went to Northern Illinois. I'm like, okay. But he's right. I couldn't get into the Illinois. But anyway, so I did the television. I always wanted to be around basketball, and that's why eventually I went to the CDA. But there was a point there during the TV, and I still was around basketball. I was down at the Citadel, and Les Robinson was nice enough. We used to play basketball there with those guys, and always close to the game. So coaching would have been something way back then. I actually spoke to, at the time, George Felton was he became the head coach of the University of South Carolina. He was an assistant for Bobby Kremins at Georgia Tech for years, and this is the mid-80s, about possibly the graduate assistant's job at Carolina, South Carolina. But that would have been, and then the other thing is, and, you know, maybe this is lofty aspirations. My father was a lawyer, and he ended up working in a bank for 35 years. He wound up being the president of the bank, chairman of the board. It was a small bank in our little town, but he never practiced law, and I was around it a lot. My neighbor was a lawyer. His son became a judge. I did an internship with a lawyer, and I you know, this is going to sound weird, but on the road, there have been times over the years, lots of times, where I go to court and I'm just an observer, and I've been fascinated by that. Like I said, I read all the time. What I like about it is that there's right and wrong. There's always gray area. There's two sides, but the law separates what, you know, in the end, and I realize there's a jury system or whatever, but a lot of times the rule of law is the great separator, and I love reading about old cases and whatever. So that would have been something I thought about. One year, you know, and over years, I've played so many of these so-called celebrity golf tournaments where you go and you help pitch in for a charity, and by playing golf, they feed you, you know what I mean? Like, who should be thanking who here? But it was with a bunch of lawyers in Westchester.
Right.
And the dad, it was a personal injury firm, and the dad was there, and there was a guy about my age, just about 15 years ago. And they kind of got wind of this, what I was talking about. And the dad said, well, geez, you ought to think about, and the son stopped me, he goes, Dad, he's a sportscaster. Like, why would he ever do that? But certainly it's something I've given thought to over the years.
I'm amazed that Tom McGinnis would sit in courtrooms and just, well, I've been in those courtrooms when I was studying journalism at Temple. A couple of assignments I got from teachers was go to a courtroom, study or cover a case for a day to write about it. It is fascinating. I can see how someone would get caught up in that.
Yeah. No, it is. And sometimes you strike out. Sometimes it's so boring, but sometimes you're like, holy smokes. And then it could be very interesting because that's real. You know what I'm saying? It's not TV. It's not some reality, some made-up TV show. It's real. And just the powers of observation and everything that's going on, you have to sort it out and kind of figure out what's going on. And even in Philly, when I was single back when I first started here in the 90s, I would sit there at the Judicial Center a couple times because I have no hair, but at the time I had a short haircut, and they would think I was like a police officer, and I'd get from the judge, what do we got back there? I'm like, just an observer, right? Tom McGinnis from the Sixers, right? They would see, they were trying to figure out. I would get some looks sometimes from the defense side, like I was in there, But that, even in Memphis, I got that in Shelby County, Tennessee one time. But for the most part, you can just go in there. I did it in Toronto. I've done it in London. I did it in Bermuda. I mean, for the most part, you can just, it's our system. You can just go sit in there and be an observer, and to me, it's entertaining. I get it; it's a little dry, but like I said, the reporter in me, the powers of observation, it really it gives you a lot to think about.
Speaking with Tom McGinnis, Sixers play-by-play man, right here on 97.5 The Fanatic. You mentioned Toronto. Tomorrow's the anniversary of it—the quadruple doink. That has to be, although unfortunate, one of the more historic calls of your career.
Well, no question about it. And just to be in that situation, a game seven on the road, I mean, that's obviously why you try to get home court advantage. And, the Sixers ran into an incredible player in Kawhi Leonard, who was at the peak of his powers. And I remember the first time we played him with the Raptors, not in the playoffs, and I'll get to that, but just the regular season game. And we hadn't seen him. Those Spurs players, they didn't play against us. We didn't see Tim Duncan for like the last 3 years of his career, other than shooting bank shots, warming up at 5:30, and Kawhi was the same way. And remember, he'd only played 14 games the previous year, but he started to guard Ben right in front of me. He tore in on me. I'm like, holy smokes! I forgot how good this guy was. Speaking of Leonard, and he was going to show him, this is what I got. And then that game, remember, 45 points, 41 points. And then in that game, I believe we had another 45 in that game-winning shot. As I said before, I actually called it off a monitor because I was in the front row and couldn't see all the way down there, and actually practiced in the third quarter if that came up, if there was a big play there. And sure enough, as I think it was Ibaka inbounded a tile, and I've shared this before, but then I turned to the monitor and watched the rest of it on TV like you guys as well, other than it was 68 feet away from me down in the right baseline corner. But also, you got to go back in that game. The Sixers scored 13 points in the opening quarter, and I hate to go here, but Ben and Joel had a combined 9 turnovers in the game. There were a lot of shot clock violations at the very end. Yep. There were a lot of things that went into that, including Game 4 in Philadelphia, where the Sixers had a 2-1 lead. The game is tied with 6 minutes to go, and the Sixers could not get it done, and Leonard hit a huge three-pointer over Joel with a minute to go to put them over to tie the series at 2 games. But if the Sixers go up and win that game, and again, Joel was under the weather that game, that series is 3-1, and it might be a whole different story than coming down to that final shot that bounced on the rim 4 times and went in and gave the Raptors maybe the most miraculous shot in Game 7 NBA playoff history.
Speaking with Tom McGinnis, Tom, last thing for me at least, I know that nobody knows about when sports will return or if the Sixers return, if basketball returns. How optimistic are you and what's your gut telling you about getting at least a 16-team tournament back from the NBA?
Well, again, it's and I don't know, and that's my answer. But as Elton Brand shared with the media last Monday and in speaking with the league, it's going to be driven by data, and they're going to push the decision. It was reported that Adam Silver talked about this with the players and that it may be in June, and that's what you have to wait on. And I, you know, you get the sense that they're going to do the right thing. So it would be awesome, but it has to be right for everybody involved, the players, the staff, the country, and the NBA has proven to be a tremendous leader in many, episodes, issues across the board over the years. And you got to trust that Adam Silver and the crew will make the right call.
Yeah. Well, I know this much, Tom. We miss, obviously, the Sixers, but we certainly miss you calling the games as well. You do such a fantastic job. And I'm not kidding. I'm going to at least send you a couple children's books or something. And we got to get a little, we got like 60 seconds of Tom McGinnis doing children's books.
That's right. Hey, boys and girls, are you kidding me?
Tom, great catching up with you, man. Thanks so much. Good luck in the ping pong tournaments. Who's leading the family series so far?
Like I said, the 14-year-old Luke has begun to take over, and he's walking around with a swagger.
Tom, you're the best.
Thank you.
Hope Thanks, to see you
Tom.
Soon, buddy.
Tom one,
McGinnis
buddy.
Is right there. Thanks, Tom. Oh, my God.
Bye, guys.
All see right, you, buddy.
See
Thanks so much.
You hear the voice, and it makes you miss basketball even more, doesn't it?
You know, it really does. I mean, there's a comfort to it. Tom is so – he's great at what he does. And I mean, I grew up with him with the Iverson era. And, like, if I had to – if I was, for whatever reason, not home yet, running late, getting home to watch a game, and I'm listening to Tom, like, those are memories that will live on forever. Forever listening to Tom McGinnis make those calls. And what's always funny is if you could be listening to game 13 or 14 on the season with somebody in the car that's not a big basketball fan. Like, my wife didn't grow up in this area. Like, she'll listen and she'll be like, is this a playoff game?
Yeah.
Is this a game 7? And you're like, no, it's the second week of the season. This is just Tom. And, like, he calls games as Philadelphia fans relate to the game. Like, we have that kind of passion, and we'll talk about Brian Dawkins. He played the game with the passion we had as fans. Tom calls the game.
Man, that's irritating.
Tom calls the game with the passion.
We got action here to center.
I to be honest, when we would be on long road trips, you know, you're on the road for up to 2 weeks or whatever, and, you know, you're doing game number whatever. There were times where McGinnis would be seated near me in the press area, and it was like a comfort. It was a comfort to watch the game and hear Tom's voice at the same time, because not a lot of times on the road is he near me enough that I could actually hear him. But on those few times that it were, and it usually came on long road trips, it was comforting. It really was. It was like, oh, okay, I'm back home listening to Tom McGinnis. And then you realize, oh, no, I'm not. I'm 3,000 miles away.
Welcome to Philadelphia.
I can't imagine sitting in a courtroom, turning around, and there's Tom McGinnis in, like, the back row just there for his own. I hate to use the word entertainment and belittle the court system, but, like, he's intrigued by that.
Yeah.
He's absolutely intrigued. He'll go on the road. Did you know that, Bob?
When he brought it up, I remembered him telling story. Because, you know, what are you doing tomorrow? You know, you want to go see a movie or something? You want to go? And I went to the courtroom yesterday. And I do remember him. You know, Tom and I had dinner many, many, many times through the years. And, yeah, that's looking to kill time on the road. That was one of his joys. And that's a pretty neat thing.
That's amazing. When we come back, we'll jump a little bit more into the commissioner of the league's comments. Also, Joel Embiid actually working out at the team practice facility over the weekend. Time of the Fanatic is 9:24.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.